In the slide number six, another important component of the acquisition chain is presented, the sample and hold. Let's remember that the need for having a sample and hold into an acquisition chain like this is relative to some requirements. The first and let's say the most classic one is that we decide to reconstruct the behavior of the signal that we want to read from the acquisition unit, and specifically we want to take under control and monitor continuously the shape of this signal. So we need to read with enough velocity the values that this signal assume, and we know that theoretically the sampling frequency should be set around two times the frequency of the signal, but in practice, for reasons that we have already described in the past, we sample at 5-10 times the frequency of the signal. This is the first reason that pushes us to introduce a sample and hold unit in the chain. But typically this is not fix the requirement, because it depends on the magnitude that we want to control. For example, a temperature is not necessary to know every second what is the value of the temperature in a room or in environment. In this case, the sampling requirement is clearly more relaxed. But there is another reason that could bring us to such a solution, and it is related to the conversion velocity of the analog to digital converter. In fact, there are converters that take a few microseconds for the conversion, even a few nanoseconds, but there are also converters that take hundreds of milliseconds to perform a suitable conversion, and clearly this could be not compliant with the velocity of the signal that we are converting. In other words, if the signal that we are converting is faster, let's say, in terms of mutation, of changing that it can assume, with respect to the conversion velocity of the ADC, it is necessary to freeze the signal in the input at the input of the converter, and this means that we need a electronic component, the sample and hold, indeed, that keeps the signal stable for the subsequent conversion. In the slide, two pictures are shown. The first is, let's say, the generic diagram that represents the sampling and hold unit. We clearly see the analog input, the analog output. We see the command, the logic input, I mean, the pins corresponding to the power supply to the component, and the pins to which a capacitor must be connected, because the sample and holds, the sample and hold components that you find onto the market are not equipped with this component, since it is a responsibility of the engineer to decide what kind of charge capability we want to have, and clearly what time of holding phase we can select. Looking inside at this component, we see that the specific sample and hold stage is represented by a switch, but it is decoupled both with respect to input and with respect to the output. That is, it is separated by two operational amplifiers from the transducer and from the subsequent components into the chain. The slide number 7 shows how the sample and hold works, and in particular the behavior of the signal that it acquires. We see a time diagram with the command, that is, for example, 1 in the hold phase and 0 in the sample phase, and 1 again when we keep fixed the signal. And we see the time diagram of the generic input signal we are considering, a curve that goes up and down. But what it is interesting to look at is the diagram of the output signal, that is the signal that is acquired by the sample and hold unit. In fact, during the phase of the acquisition, that is during the sample interval duration, the circuit, the sample and hold unit, let's say, follows the signal, and it is necessary that the passage from 0, as shown in the output signal diagram, to the value that we want to propose to the next components in the chain is as fast as possible. If instead we have a certain delay between the instant into which the command sample arrives and the time into which the capacitor will reach the value that we have, clearly this means that we need to wait that time. The sample and hold will introduce in the chain a certain degree of delay in the overall acquisition that must be taken into account by the microprocessor and kept in mind before setting the commands for the analog to digital conversion, that is the start of conversion that will trigger the activity of the ADC. The particular velocity with which the sample and hold follows the evolution of the input signal is called slew rate. Basically, it's a derivative function. It corresponds, let's say, to a slope, and the quality of the sample and hold unit is represented by this slope that ideally should be vertical, and clearly it is not. The successive phase is called hold time, and represents the interval into which the signal is kept fixed and constant for the successive amplification unit and for the analog to digital device. Clearly, this time is not infinite, it's limited, because after a certain duration the capacitor will begin to discharge, to diminish its charge. But we not only have, let's say, a limitation in the duration of the holding phase, we have also a limitation at the beginning of this phase, because when we switch the command from sample to hold, typically the output value from the sample and hold signal oscillates. That is, the electronic circuits in the new state show a limited in the time, hopefully, capability of adapting to the new state, and this capability reflects, turns out, let's say, into a not perfectly stable signal in output, and we must wait a proper interval of time to have a very constant value presented to the ADC, to the conversion stage. This time is called settling time, and represents also very small a further component of delay in the management of this device. Therefore, we have to need a time for respecting the slew rate of the component and a time for respecting the settling time of the signal after the hold command has been given to the sample and hold. Other characteristics that clearly affect this unit are the impedances in input and in output. We know that the ideal situation foresees an infinite input impedance and a very low, perhaps zero, output impedance. Thinking to the previous component shown in slide number 6, we have seen that the sample and hold is within two operational amplifiers, and in that case the problem is solved. A couple of words concerning the operational amplifier that is typically introduced just to bring the signal that arrives from the transducer in the correct range of the analog to digital converter. It is only the case to briefly remembering the need for it. Consider for example a thermocouple whose sensibility is in the order of 50 microvolts per Celsius degree. That is, if we have to measure 100 Celsius degrees, we will have in output 5 millivolts. If we want to measure 200 degrees, we will have in output 10 millivolts. Perfect. But if we have an analog to digital converter with, for example, 10 bits and 5 volts of power supply, the equation error, the quantization error of the ADC is around 5 millivolts. So the difference in degrees, in Celsius degrees, between 100 and 200 will be converted by the ADC into two numbers, basically. And this means that our capability of distinguishing temperatures is very poor, is very reduced. Therefore, it is necessary to amplify properly the signal that comes from the transducer to better distribute it in the voltage ranges that characterize the steps of the analog to digital converter. As all the components that we include in the acquisition chain, we are interested to have a high impedance and in input and low impedance in output, but clearly this is straightforward with operational amplifier. And even in this case, we have to take into account that also an operational amplifier is characterized by a bandwidth and a slew rate. That is, it is an electronic component, so is generally speaking very fast, but it is not true. As all the electronic components, there is a range of frequencies into which the response of the component is constant, and there is another range of frequencies into which the answer of the component is not constant and will degrade. clearly we have to avoid such a range of frequencies, and we serenely can say that for typical industrial applications, this let's say critical range is very far from the working frequencies of the processes that typically we deal with. Similar considerations are related to the slew rate, because the slew rate represents the capability of an electronic component to follow immediately very quick, very fast variations in the input signal. And this is a way to express the same considerations as before. A good slew rate will correspond to a bandwidth of frequencies enough large that characterizes the specific device we are considering. Therefore, the larger the bandwidth, the better the slew rate. An interesting property of the operational amplifiers is their programmability from the acquisition unit point of view. In other words, the available electronic components are equipped with one, two, sometimes three pins through which we can modify the gain of the operational amplifier itself. This is a point that we will reconsider in the next lessons, but clearly just now is evident the need for it, because we have a few minutes ago described the need for amplifying a signal that comes from a thermocouple, just to better exploit the dynamic of the ADC converter. But since the same amplification unit and the same conversion unit is used for several signals and for several transducers, clearly not the same amplification value can be applied to all the signals that arrive through the multiplexer. And therefore, the possibility of selecting among four or eight different possible gains is very interesting for the programmer, for the engineer. There are also other motivations that suggest the introduction of a programmable amplifier, but we will see them at the right moment. In any case, let's keep in mind that another, for example, couple of bits of the output port of a microprocessor could be considered reserved for such a task. And we will see that consider the bits for the multiplexer, consider the bits for the sample and all unit, consider the bits for programming the gain of the amplifier, consider the bits in output of the ADC. Consider other bits for controlling a motor or controlling other devices. It is possible that the output bits of the microprocessor could be really close to the limit to manage all the situations. Typical operational amplifier undergoes a calibration phase before the normal activity, just to compensate the natural tendency it has to, let's say, feature an offset in the output response. That is an interval of input values to which the component is not sensible and does not provide any answer in output. Even the operational amplifier is characterized by a settling time that influences the synchronization of the microprocessor commands. This settling time is the same effect that we have seen for the sampling and hold unit. That is, after switching from one gain to another, the input signal of the operational amplifier will be presented in output, but we must wait for a certain time to have a stable signal. But the same effect is present even in case we are not switching. I mean, when the sampling and hold unit is kept in the hold phase, we said that we have a settling time. In that case, that is, the signal will be constant only after a certain interval. Okay, after that interval, the signal will be constant, but the amplification will modify it, and we have to wait another small but present interval to have a fixed signal in output towards the analog to digital converter. So the issue is that we have several small but unfortunately present delays, present settling times that must be considered in the overall duration of the interval that we must wait from the selection of a channel to the selection of the next channel in the multiplexing unit. When I say we, I mean the programmer that drives the microprocessor activity. Of course, the operational amplifier is not always necessary if it is integrated in other components of the acquisition chain. Sometimes, for example, the transducer is equipped with a certain pre-amplification stage that brings the signal directly in the 0.5 volts range of the ADC, and in particular enforces the signal with respect to the need to transmit it onto a cable on which it can collect some noise. So if the amplitude of the signal is greater, is amplified, the sensibility of the noise will be clearly reduced. And now let's come to the part related to the analog to digital converter that is, let's say, quite important in our explanation, since we will see both the errors that can compromise the accuracy of these components together with the technologies that are employed to carry out them. So I don't know if these concepts are already present in your background, but in any case, I guess no, but in any case, I think that it is not bad if we recover them, just to have a general idea of how the informatics must take into account also these characteristics during the conversion and during the elaboration of the converted signals. Okay, we know that it is necessary to transform the output of the transducer, that typically is a volt analog signal, voltage analog signal, into a binary number that is the only element, let's say, comprehensible by a computer, manageable by a computer. The input voltages that can be accepted and used by typical converters are 0.5, minus 5.5, 0.10, or in the last components even 0.3.3 volts, of course. Apart the maximum values of the signals that we provide to the ADC, let's consider that we can have the conversion of both positive signals and bipolar signals. This is very interesting, of course, because sometimes analog signals coming from the transducers, let's say, sweep around the two extremities that are symmetric, but one negative and one positive. Several models with several output bits are provided into the market. We range from typically 8 up to 24-bit ADC. Clearly, 24 bits correspond to precision that is very high. Often is out of the scope of industrial applications. 24 bits is 1 on 16 millions. So we are talking about something that may be comprehensible in physics, in measurement of very complex and particular signals, but let's say not for measuring the rotation velocity of the tires in automotive application. In that case, 14 bits, 12 bits, it's enough. In any case, we have these possibilities. Look at the fact that typically the number of the bits in output is even. And let's say the output representation is in a fixed point with or without sign format. ADCs are characterized and are different in terms of conversion algorithm, we could say, costs, conversion velocity, and clearly accuracy. This last one element depends, of course, on the number of the bits we have chosen for the ADC, and brings to a quantization error that is constant in absolute value. We know that is represented by the ratio of the reference voltage divided by the number 2 power the number of the bits. This is the absolute error in terms of voltage we can have. We can characterize the error in terms of relative percentage with respect to the maximum value of the physical magnitude that we want to convert, but we will come back on these issues later. Clearly, this means that the role of the amplifier is very important to exploit the input range of the ADC, as we have already seen. We can group the typical conversion techniques in three, let's say, general philosophies. The first one is the so-called closed-loop conversion, because it is based on the comparison between the analog signal that is coming from the transducer with the output of another dual converter, a digital to analog converter. So in this case an ADC is like a matryoshka, that is a component that inside features a similar component. The second approach is the evaluation of the time necessary to charge a capacitor, or conversely, that is not so different, the evaluation of its frequency in charging, discharging. In both the cases, this evaluation, let's say, is made by means of a timer device that is characterized by a number of bits that will be presented at the output to the successive following microprocessor acquisition unit. And the last, let's say, approach is a direct comparison between suitable voltage levels, suitable voltage thresholds that are carried out through a network of resistors. This network, let's say, provides several values with which the signal coming from the transducer is compared. Every comparison is turned out into a logic level answer 0, 1, and let's say the ensemble, or if you want, the assembling of all the outputs is a binary number that represents the converted number of the input signal, but we will see. The three methods clearly offer different velocities, because it is clear that a direct comparison with thresholds is clearly a very straightforward technique for performing the conversion, and will be probably the fastest one. Instead, the approach that waits the necessary time for charging a capacitor and discharging it will be probably the slowest one, depending on, of course, the size of the capacitor. And the closed loop comparison with the DAC is, let's say, the middle fast solution. We can assume, we will see later, but we can assume just since now that already since now that the velocity, let's say, is against the precision. In other words, the fastest converters will feature the smallest number of bits in output, and vice versa. So the time evaluation of the charge of the capacitor will be probably provide the most accurate conversion that we can have. Even in the case of the ADCs, we have to take into account a calibration phase for compensating the offset that characterizes also a converter, and the conversion time, that is the interval that is between the start of conversion signal from the microprocessor to the ADC and the end of conversion signal from the ADC to the microprocessor, clearly will affect the synchronization of the commands that the micro sends to all the components into the chain, and clearly will affect the overall duration of the acquisition and the sampling frequency of the microprocessor with respect to signals it wants to acquire. Especially this if the converter is based on the capacitor, because in this case, clearly, if we have to wait 200 or 500 milliseconds, okay, we are basically sampling at 2 Hz. So that is another philosophy, that is another class of signals. Instead, if we are using the flash converter, that is the converter based on the comparison with resistive networks, in this case we have in another side, in another part, the conversion time is around let's say 10-20 nanoseconds. So with this solution we can sample very fast signals, and we are in a let's say completely different class of applications. The slide number 10 is very important because it shows a group of possible errors that can affect the conversion in an analog to digital converter. In other words, we could be persuaded that the conversion curve is ideal, that is a staircase curve, a staircase characteristic made of several steps constant with a switch from one interval to the next one when the input signal overtakes a certain threshold. And we can be persuaded that, let's say, the overall interpolation of such a kind of characteristic is a linear line, constant slope curve. But this is not true. This would be true if the converter would be ideal, but clearly this is not the case. And we have to consider the possibility that four errors, four non-ideal effects will affect our converter. The first is the simplest one to manage. We have already said a couple of words about it, and is the so-called offset error. In this case, you see in the picture that the characteristic of the converter is ideal, is a sequence of steps, but at the beginning we have a certain range of analog input values with respect to which we have no appreciable output from the component, from the converter. Clearly this moves, let's say this shifts the characteristic with respect to the ideal line shown in the diagram towards the right part, but what it is very positive, doesn't affect the amplitude of the steps. So the capability of distinguishing the values by the ADC point of view is, let's say, kept, is maintained. The only operation that we need to perform is a calibration, that is, at the beginning, out of the normal activity, we have to provide to the converter a set of input values and to read the corresponding outputs so as to estimate what is the amplitude of the offset range and in the microprocessor unit to correct properly the conversion of the binary value that we are reading into a voltage that is affected by that error, an operation that is very easy to do. The second error is a little bit more critical because it affects the, let's say, slope of the interpolating line that is no more 45 degrees inclinated, but can have a different, let's say, slope due to the fact that the amplitude of every step is not ideal. Let's remember that the amplitude of every step corresponds to the quantization error of the analog to digital converter and is represented by the ratio between the reference voltage, the maximum power supply, 5 volts, for example, divided by the number that we obtain if we calculate 2 power, the number of the bits. This is the ideal value of the quantization error, and it is called 1LSB, that stands for one least significant bit, because it is, or it should be, the variation in the input signal necessary to cause a variation in the output of the numbers that are proposed to the microprocessor with one bit only that is changing. If the amplitude of every step is different from this ideal value, the slope of the curve that is considered as interpolating the middle point of every interval will be no more ideal, but will be inclinated with a different value. And the net effect of this is that at a certain point we will have that a group of possible outputs of the converter will be not present, because due to the slope of the converter, of the characteristic of the converter that is different, we will reach the maximum value in the analog inputs before we have reached the maximum value in the output binary number. And therefore we could have, let's say, an analog to digital converter with for example 12 bits, but in practice we are using only 8 of those bits. In other words, we can have a reduction in the accuracy, in the precision of the converter, when we know that this effect is present, we can decide if even in this case the error is acceptable or not. More critical can be considered those errors that are called linearity errors. In this case, the amplitude of every step is not constant, but what it is very dangerous is that the amplitude is not constant. That is, the variation changes from time to time. In the picture, we see the first situation into which the amplitude is different from the ideal one, but is different from time to time. That is, you see, the first interval, the first step is probably ideal. The second one is very larger. The third one is again ideal. The fourth one is probably a little bit shorter than in the ideal case, and the last two are considerably shorter than the ideal case, probably half the amplitude. So the interpolating curve in this case is not a line, is a curve. And the sensibility, the accuracy of the analog to digital converter is not constant, but it changes depending the range of the input values, and clearly this is not acceptable. But finally, the worst case is represented by the last picture that is called that represents the non-linearity differential error. In this case, the amplitude of the step is variable, we can have that the overall effect is still to have an interpolating curve equal to a line, some code in output can be missing. And this is very dangerous, because if in the case of an integral non-linearity error, the previous one, the effect is clear and is evident, in this case the sum of all the effects can, let's say, hidden the problem. But at the end we could have one of the possible outputs, one of the possible number converted by the device, that is always not present in output, and of course this is not acceptable, because it compromises completely our capability of reading the physical variables that the transducer has sent to us. But this will be the content of the next lesson.